You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the National League East for MLB.com Extras. And for the second straight week, the big storyline is the Mets and the Nationals going head-to-head, this time in the nation's capital. So let's start with our MLB.com Nationals reporter, Bill Latson. Bill, a week ago, we spent most of the podcast talking about the Nationals and Mets, and they're at it again this week, but from D.C. this time. Obviously, it was a good series in Queens, as the Nationals took two out of three despite dropping the first game. They pitched well in the series, and they kind of gave themselves a little cushion in the East with the victory and a nice little run. That cushion has kind of evaporated as the Mets have now heated up again. And the Mets take game one of this series on Monday night, and it was interesting because it was kind of a flip of the script from Wednesday night of last week. You had Bartolo Colon suddenly pitching well after the Nationals had gotten to him a week ago, and Gio Gonzalez struggled a bit. But the thing that surprised me was, you would think, Bill, that the second time facing the same pitcher in less than a week, the advantage kind of swings to the hitters. But Colon looked so much better on Monday night than he did last week in New York. What were the Nationals saying about Colon? Did he have different stuff, or is he just that kind of crafty veteran pitcher that he's able to fool a team five nights later?
Tim, it was a combination of both. Dusty Baker maybe said it best yesterday. He talked about how, 1 minute Colon was throwing 83 miles an hour, and the next minute he was throwing 92. One pitch got as far as 98 miles an hour. So, he was changing speeds, and that was the key. And we got to keep in mind, too, Tim, overall, the Nationals offense is not very good. It hasn't been good from really in 2 years. And they need to get more consistent. It can't be just Bryce Harper doing all the stuff. So, to be honest with you, I just think that the Mets pitchers think that, the Nationals offense isn't very good.
We had Strasburg versus Harvey last week, and it was very lopsided, as that Nationals offense that struggled so much didn't struggle at all. They looked great against Matt Harvey early and often in that game, and Strasburg was just at it again, doing what he does. Now they face Harvey again. What are Nats players? I mean, what's the vibe you get about their feelings going into another game against a pitcher who is supposed to be one and the best in the game, but clearly hasn't been right this season?
Well, obviously, they're not going to say this is an automatic win, but, they have to wait and see. They have to be careful with Harvey because, he had batting practice and pitching practice Saturday. And, hopefully, for the Mets anyway, he can get it together. So I think the Nationals definitely don't think this is an easy victory at all.
All right, so Strasburg has clearly been tremendous this season for the Nationals, and so has Scherzer, even though we've picked apart the fact that he's given up a lot of home runs, but he's also been extremely dominant. As you've watched these two pitchers pitch throughout this season so far, Bill, which guy has been more impressive to you in 2016, Strasburg or Scherzer?
I have to say Scherzer because of the way he can be so dominant, the way he concentrates on that mound. It doesn't bother me that he gives up a lot of home runs. I mean, most of them are solo shots anyway. So I have to say it's definitely Scherzer. And also, he's not bad with the bat either, so I have to give it to him.
Yeah, he certainly helps himself out from time to time. So we've talked about the offense, and while it certainly struggled overall and struggled again on Monday, there was a little stretch there, Bill, heading into Monday where things were starting to look a little bit better. Ben Revere had a three-game stretch where he went 7-for-14. He drove in some runs, had some stolen bases. Anthony Rendon, who's been ice cold between May 10th and Monday night, had really been hitting .405, a bunch of doubles for him. He had been driving in runs and taking walks. And Wilson Ramos has been hitting as well. Are those little glimmers of what this offense can be?
Yes, I mean, especially with Rendon. I mean, Rendon has been hot lately. I think they really need him to really get it going, drive in runs, hit some home runs. Wilson Ramos, it's great to see that he's consistent with the bat now. He's had, he had LASIK surgery during spring training, and that seemed to have been the trick for him. So hopefully these guys can remain consistent. Ben Revere as well, he's starting to get it going now after missing a month of action. So hopefully this is what they need to, in order to win the division.
Todd, the Phillies playing in American League ballpark, which means the DH rule is in effect, which means interesting things for this Phillies lineup, which has obviously struggled at times this season. But for one thing, it allows Tommy Joseph and Ryan Howard to both be playing at the same time, which gives an interesting look, and maybe it's an interesting way to kind of evaluate these guys, because Howard continues to obviously struggle outside the power numbers he's put up, and Tommy Joseph has had his moments, 2-for-4 with a home run on Monday. Is there a time in the near future where Joseph could? I know we've talked about this in the past, and the thought is, hey, Howard's making all this money. It's the end of the line for him. He's going to keep playing. But if Joseph continues to hit, is there a time down the line where maybe he gets a little more playing time?
Yeah, I think so. I think Pete McCannon kind of opened that door this week when he said, you know, I'm going to take this situation week to week. Now, even just a week ago, he said, listen, I'm planning on keeping it a platoon. I'm not planning on changing anything. But clearly by saying I'm going to take it week to week means that the door is slightly ajar. And I think there's a few reasons for that. And number one is Ryan Howard is really, really struggling. He's hitting about 150, 160, and just not producing consistently enough for a team that is desperate for runs. And Tommy Joseph has been. But second, I think they wanted to give Ryan Howard a good opportunity the first couple months of the season to kind of prove himself. I mean, the plan going into the season was he would be a very effective platoon player against right-handed pitching, and that just has not turned out to be the case. But they wanted to give him a chance. You know what I mean? So in other words, they didn't want to go up to him in the first week of May and say, listen, you know, you're not really hitting. You didn't really hit well in April. We're going to kind of start putting you on the bench a little bit. They wanted him to be able to point to him and say, listen, we gave you 2 full months or 2.5 months to get on track. That's a pretty long grace period. You're not getting it done. We're going to start playing Tommy Joseph a little bit more. And so I think that's why Pete kind of opened that door this week. And so it would not surprise me if, you know, in a week or two or maybe even sooner, you start seeing Tommy Joseph start at first base, even against some right-handed pitching.
And plus, it's a young guy. You want to get him the more at-bats anyway, because that was a discussion we had. Why bring him up if he's not going to get as much time as he would be in AAA? So that's another reason, is to get him that time at the major league level. You mentioned Pete, and he made a strong move, I thought, on Monday night. The best hitter on this team, you could argue, through the first quarter of this season has been Odubel Herrera, or one of them, certainly. And he was 3-for-3 on Monday night at one point, but he ends up getting pulled from the game because he didn't run out a ground ball. Now, Pete McKinnon pulled him from the game. It's obviously a strong message, and I think an important message, right? Because this is still a young team and a team that's kind of learning how to play, and maybe surprising to everybody, learning how to win. But that's one of the things you have to do is hustle every play. And he wasn't about to put up with something like that, even in a close ball game with a hitter like Herrera, who's been one of his top offensive guys.
Yeah, I really like the fact that he did this and didn't kind of look the other way and say, you know what, he's 3-for-3. We're desperate for offense. How can I pull out my best hitter? I think Pete is kind of looking at the bigger picture here and wanted to send a very firm reminder to everybody on the team. Remember why we're here and why we are playing as well as we have been. It's because, not necessarily because we had the best talent on the field, but because we've really been scratching runs across when we needed it. We've hustled. Energy is a big part of our game. And you know what? You didn't show any energy here. You didn't show any hustle here. And as a result, I'm going to pull you. And I think that kind of knowing when to push those buttons or when to make those moves is kind of what has made Pete an effective manager with the Phillies. He has a good feel for things, a good read on things. And like I said, it would have been really easy for him just to go, well, you know, I'll talk to him after the game about it because he is one of our best hitters and I'm trying to win this game. He said, no, I'm going to send a message right now and just remind everybody, you need to hustle and you need to play with energy. Because that's really what's going to help us keep playing as well as we have been.
Yeah, and it certainly has more of an impact on the team as a whole to do it in front of the team as opposed to talking to him after the game. as well. Well, there's no mystery that pitching has been the reason for the Phillies' surprising start. And one guy who you really couldn't involve in that discussion was Jared Eichhoff, who had struggled. But he gets back on track on Sunday, and I think a real important start. Obviously, it was against the Braves, but the Braves are still a professional baseball team. Seven scoreless innings against Atlanta. And just from looking at the game, seeing the highlights and the talk about the game, it's just about him locating, right? It's the command. It's being able to pinpoint that fastball where he wants it to be.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. When his location is off, he's not quite as effective. And I think what you're seeing a little bit might be just some growing pains of a young guy who, when he came to Philadelphia in that Cole Hamels trade, was, I want to say, he definitely was not a throw-in. By far, he was not a throw-in. But he was not the top three guys in that trade. And I think the fact that he made the big leagues when he did last year and pitched as well as he did last year surprised a lot of people. So I think a lot of people maybe thought he was going to be consistent from the get-go this season. But you're still seeing a young, relatively inexperienced guy and who's trying to find his way a little bit. And he's learning that, you know, hey, I really have to bear down and command the strike zone and command my pitches if I'm going to be effective. But the Phillies really love Jared Eichhoff. I've probably said this to you before, but, you know, to the point where teammates and coaches last season and even this season, they just love him on the mound because he's got a little bit of a bulldog personality. He's aggressive, and he works fast. And so I think if he can get through this little rough patch, maybe build off his last start, it could really, you know, it'll be a really encouraging sign for this rotation, you know, when you talk about Nola, Velasquez, and Eichhoff.
Joe, let's get right into things with this Marlins team. A tough week a week ago. They dropped 2 out of 3 to the Phillies and then 2 out of 3 to the Nationals. But it's the Battle of Florida this week, a 2-2 home-and-home set with the Rays. And the Marlins get off to a nice start in the series on Monday night. And Monday night, kind of a milestone as far as Florida Major League Baseball goes, I guess, because it was the 100th meeting between these two clubs. And, Joe, what stands out to me is how even it is. With the Marlins' victory on Monday, the Rays lead the series 51-49 after 100 games. I mean, for it to be that even after that many games is kind of remarkable between these two teams.
Yeah, Tim, and keep in mind the Marlins kind of dominated the early part of the series and even kind of the mid-2000s. And then the Rays, you know, when they you know, dramatically improved in that 2006, 2007, 2008, whenever they went to the World Series, they've been a really, really formidable opponent. And the Marlins have kind of gone the other way with 6 straight losing years. And last year, the Rays took 5 of 6. So Monday night's game was an exciting game. I mean, if you're just a baseball fan normally the Marlins don't win 7-6 games in that fashion. You know, they usually pitch better than that to have to win. But it was an exciting game, not the best pitch game. But the Rays have a team that's very aggressive on the bases. They hit a lot of home runs. The Marlins have Marcell Ozuna scorching hot right now. And Stanton is trying to wake up from his slump. There's no reason why this shouldn't be a very exciting 4-game set, you know, heading to drop, for the final 2 games of this thing.
Yeah, they're two teams that I think match up well and two teams that are planning to stay in contention throughout the season. You mentioned Ozuna and how Huddy's been and Stanton trying to wake up. How about Ichiro Suzuki? 4 hits on Monday night. This guy is red hot now for the season, heading into Tuesday's game, hitting .417. And he's getting some more at-bats in the last week or so because of Christian Yelich's back spasms. But with Ichiro hitting as well as he is right now, is there just that temptation to have him in the lineup day after day, or is that something dangerous considering his age?
No, yeah, I mean, just take it for what it is. Yeah. You know, Christian Yelich is having an all-star caliber season, and, he's dealt with back spasms before, and he was telling me, though, he spent time on the DL in 14 and 15, ironically, right about this time of year, in that mid-May to mid-June range is when he's kind of been inflicted, and then it goes away, and he is able to play the rest of the year. But he said that was, they called that a lower back strain. screen in those days. This, he said, a little bit more in the middle of the back, not so much where the his previous concerns were. And Yelly has done a real lot to kind of maintain, so there's a frustration level to not be in the lineup. But, you know, Ichiro to step in and just, you know, he comes in on Saturday on late notice, gets four hits, has two hits on Sunday against Scherzer, of all people. And then Monday, as you know, four hits, 10 hits in the 13 at-bat stretch. And that matched a kind of modern-day record for someone 42 or older. Have that many hits over three games. You're going back to Cap Anson back in the 1800s, last time somebody's done something like that. But just, you know, obviously a lot of people coming into this season thinking, you know, Ichiro started the year off 65 hits shy of 3,000. And, you know, was this, you know, would he even reach that total? Would he just kind of, you know, fade away and look, you know, kind of like an aging veteran in decline? And, but, you know, he's swinging the bat really well. He's hitting really good pitching, and he's, you know, it's amazing sometimes a 42-year-old breathing, you know, new life into a young squad and being kind of the super sub the Marlins envision when they signed him to begin with last year.
Yeah, now 3,000 hits looks not just likely overall, but it on this current pace, he'll get there before the All-Star break. But
I don't know about that, Timmy. But the thing about it is, you know, everyone always talks about, well, how he get the at-bats, assuming help for Yelich, Stanton, Ozuna. But as you know, things always happen. The sport guys break down. There's always little, you know, tweaks and things. And as long as Ichiro is just showing that he can stay sharp, and that's going to be key. Obviously, you're not going to hit at the 10 for 13 clip too long. But, you know, you know, just to keep him, you know, rested and sharp, and he looks really – he's always in great shape, but the bat speed kind of tended to go at the end of last year, which made a lot of people question if he had anything left, let alone 65 hits. But – you know, we'll see how it goes, but he's been a great story, and he's a great figure in baseball history, and we know what he means internationally, and the Marlins are lucky to have him, and baseball, the industry is, you know, lucky to have, you know, this to kind of celebrate, you know, in this season.
And Mark, we got to start things off today as we record this. Shortly after the news has come out, Hector Oliveira gets 82 games. Now, that's... Not a complete, I mean, it's 82 games, but it goes through August 1st, 2016, basically. So it gets a little like time served, so to speak. But what was the initial reaction? I know the Braves haven't had much to say, but just from what you've heard in the Atlanta area, was this kind of the expected type of length of suspension that he would receive?
I do believe so. You know, we've seen the two previous suspensions this year with Aroldis Chapman and Jose Reyes, their suspensions. Covering less time with Chapman getting 30 and Reyes essentially getting 51 with some of that being retroactive through spring training. I do think that, you know, from the start, we understood, you know, first of all, that this is a very serious matter regardless of the what transpired, but you could tell that this was going to carry a stiff penalty, and Major League Baseball has responded in that manner with this 82 game suspension, which like you said, the retroactive date was placed as April 30th, primarily because of the policy that was put in place where a player can be placed on administrative leave for 7 days. That leave was extended actually 2 weeks to 2 weeks. So that's where we got from April 13th to the April 30th date. He will be allowed to begin working out at the spring training complex on July 15th, which, you know, sets up the possibility that he could be physically ready to play for the Braves maybe sometime in August. But as things currently stand, I do not expect to see Hector Oliveira wearing a Braves uniform anymore. I realize that may be something where you're saying, you know, people are reacting to this situation. Sometimes feelings and emotions will change over time. Well, they really haven't over the, you know, nearly 2 months now that have passed since the incident occurred. So, I continue to stick with my belief that the Braves will do whatever they have to do. You know, obviously you don't necessarily want to eat that the remaining salary, which would be close to $30 million. But at the same time, I think that the Braves have made it clear without publicly speaking that they do do not really have much interest in him playing for their organization again.
Yeah, and that being
at the big league level, especially.
Yeah, and that being known, it will be difficult for them to, I would think, get much in return or anything like that. It may end up at a point where they just have to give him his release, but that'll be a discussion for down the road, certainly. And he hasn't been in the lineup, as you said, for some time, so it doesn't have really a big effect on this team on the field right now as well. As for this team on the field right now, when you look at a game on Wednesday night, Mark, they fall in 13 innings to the Brewers, and last time we had the podcast, Snicker had just taken over as manager. It was right after that it all happened, with Freddy Gonzalez being relieved of his duty. And Snicker last night, you know, he goes through all of his pitchers basically and then doesn't have much late, right? And that's going to add to them have to make some moves here. But this is just kind of, is it on the job training, I guess, for Snicker at the big league level, or did he just not expect the game to go the way it went?
Well, you know, that went a couple different ways there. That was, you know, here's a guy who has waited, you know, a long time to be a big league manager. He gets the job. And then, look, the assignment is not easy. When, you know, a lot of times your manager, the degree of difficulty is determined by the pieces that you have, and it is not easy to manage this bullpen. You look at, you know, they've gone through basically three different setup men through this first 45 games of the season. They've tried Jason Grilly there. They tried Jim Johnson there. They've recently moved Bud Norris, who began the year in the rotation. He's their setup man. They have a lot of situational guys, and what transpired on Wednesday was you basically saw Snicker trying to just match up guys, lefties, a lot of these situational lefties, the righties he feels confident, righty on righty. Well, at the end of the day, he ends up using all seven relievers over the final 10 outs. You know, I think, you know, you realized every move. You know, why you was making the move at the moment. It seemed like the right thing to do. But when you're managing a game, you got to remember you're also managing, you know, a team that's going to have to play the following day. And the lingering effect of what you do that night will have consequences moving forward. And what transpired on Wednesday night was they got to the 10th inning and they had to use their starting pitcher, their scheduled starting pitcher, Casey Kelly, for the final four innings. And not only are you burning your starter for Saturday, you're also bringing Kelly back with just 2 days of rest. He ends up throwing 77 pitches on Wednesday, and then after throwing 81 pitches on Sunday. You know, here's a guy who's coming back from Tommy John. This was certainly not the right situation and or a good situation for him to have to be in. And unfortunately, it led to, you know, it simply set the stage for him to be optioned back to Gwinnett just because he probably will not be able to, even permitted to pitch for another probably week. Now, I'm sure the team will shut him down, rest him, and move forward. This may open up the door for Aaron Blair to come back and start on Saturday. But, you know, you're trying to win a game, and you're doing anything and everything you can to win that game. But you got to remember, sometimes when you're managing that particular ball game, you're also managing a team. You're managing a season. And I think that if they had that to do over again, they would have approach some of those bullpen changes on Wednesday night a little bit different. Maybe allowed a, you know, a righty to face a lefty, kept a lefty in an extra guy longer. You know, it would not have transpired to where they were stuck with basically using Casey Kelly in the manner that they did.
Anthony, things looked like they were slipping away for paranoid Mets fans a week ago, losing 2 out of 3 to the Nationals, but quickly the team rights the ship over the weekend, and now suddenly heading into Tuesday night's game, they're on a win streak, back right in the race, a half game back of the Nats, and looking good after a Monday night game in which they kind of switched the script a little bit on the Nationals. Same pitching matchup as last Wednesday, but a completely different Bartolo Colon against the same general lineup. Usually you think that advantage would go to the hitters facing the same pitcher for the second time in a week. How was Colon able to do what he did on Monday night?
Can I tell you, it's baseball, Tim. I
mean, it's Bartolo Colon.
Yeah, well, it is Bartolo Colon. And the thing about him that you have to remember is that stuff-wise, well, he probably has better stuff than people give him credit for because he can still throw in the 90s at, happy birthday, by the way, age
yes.
43. For him, it's all about location. If he's hitting his spots, if he's hitting the corners of the strike zones and forcing opposing hitters to swing at pitches that are pitchers' pitches, then he's going to do well more often than not. And when he doesn't have that location for whatever reason, it's baseball, like I said, it comes and goes. When he's not as precise, when he's not as fine, when the balls are leaking into the middle of the plate, his stuff isn't good enough that he's going to be able to get guys out regardless, like a Noah Syndergaard can when he's not hitting his spot. So for Bartolo, it's all about location, and regardless of whether he's facing the Nationals two games in a row or the Rockies or the Reds or whoever, that's the name of the game. And it can come and it can go, and it's what you're going to get all season long. But overall, it's going to be a pretty consistent statistical profile that you're seeing from Colon.
And that sets us up for another rematch as far as the mound matchup goes. Harvey and Strasburg, and this was a mismatch on Thursday, a 9-1 win for the Nationals. Strasburg continued what's been a great season for him so far, and Matt Harvey continued to just kind of make you scratch your head a little bit. 2 2/3 innings on Thursday, shortest outing of his career. I know he got some work in, obviously, and trying to tweak things in the bullpen, and there was talk about actually letting him take a little extra time off. That doesn't happen, so he's back on the hill here. What did he work on? What are the adjustments? And is there a vibe or a feeling that he's going to be more effective this time around?
Yeah, well, what I found interesting was that, you know, pitchers typically throw their bullpen sessions between starts, and that's it. They do it off in a corner quietly, and they work on some things. But Matt Harvey almost made a little bit of a show out of his. He went to the main mound in Citi Field, and the reason why he did that was twofold. One was so that he could get the adrenaline up. He actually faced live batters who stood in there and took swings, so they wanted to simulate a real game and get that adrenaline up. And two was that they have their TrackMan system, their statistical system that they use there at Citi Field that they can draw data from, and that's velocity, that's arm angle, that's arm slot, things like that. And, you know, Matt Harvey wanted to see what he was doing mechanically, what he could do better mechanically. And the Mets were curious to see about the velocity as well, but that's a little less important. And, of course, going into the start on Tuesday, they say that they're confident in Matt Harvey. They have to be confident in Matt Harvey. This guy's a huge piece of what they want to do, of what they need to do to get back to the playoffs, get back to the World Series, and ultimately this time around win the thing. So they need this guy to be right. I do think not skipping him and letting him go out there, even against the same team, the Nationals, 5 days later, I do think it was the right call, because I'm not sure what you're accomplishing by sending him down to the minors. Maybe you could make a case that you could skip a start, and if he continues to struggle, I'm sure at some point the Mets will do that with Matt Harvey. But for as long as they know that there's nothing physically wrong with this guy, that it's just a matter of either mechanics or really just get wrapping his head around what's going wrong with him, then there's no reason to not keep putting him out there every 5 days, every five games, and saying, you know what, we need you to get right, so let's start now.